So as you're turning your Bibles open to Ezekiel, the third chapter, let me go back and review just for a moment the things that we began studying last week so that we all might know what we're going to be talking about. For the past few Lord's Day mornings, we have been studying the subject of the Bible teaching concerning death. And as we are studying this very vital subject, we have gone now to the book of Ecclesiastes, which deals with this in a little bit different perspective than any other book in all of the Bible. Now, the book of Ecclesiastes deals with the subject of death by showing that it is a very, very important ingredient in the life of man, and by showing that when an individual views his death, that is the thing that makes his life be put into the proper perspective. Now, if I were to draw a diagram up here on the board of a man's life, we've already studied the subject of showing about how many years a man lives. In Psalms, the 90th chapter, we find that over here a man is born. And then as we would come on down through approximately 70 years, over here is where another big event happens, and that is where a man dies. And so then we have been looking at this, and sometimes we've drawn little circles in here representing years, and saying that we have 70 of these time periods from the time we're born until the time we die. Now, really, we can understand that man views three great things in his life. Number one over here is this life that we live right here that one might call a physical life. Number two would be his death over here is a great and a traumatic event. And then number three here is life that comes after death. Now, if we take these three events right here, number one, number two, and number three, God knows that man has a weakness. He knows that every one of us has a tendency to look at the things that we can see with our eyes, at those things that are right here with us today, rather than looking far off many years hence and trying to see things with mind's eye that we cannot see with the mind's eye that we cannot see with the physical eye. And so God knows that man then begins to zero in on this particular life right here. So the book of Ecclesiastes does this. It does something different than any other book in all of the Bible. The book of Ecclesiastes asks this question: what is life all about right here? That is, what is life on this earth all about? Now, the book of Ecclesiastes just draws a line right down here, and it says, now, we're not going to even view life after death. For just a little while, we're going to act as though life after death does not even exist. We're going to view life over here just as though there is no life over here. Now, I want to hasten to say, in case you only happen to hear me this one time, that the book of Ecclesiastes, at the end of the book, does come back and say that there is a life after death. And then it puts the whole thing in its proper perspective. But not until we get down to the very last chapter in the book of Ecclesiastes does it really come down and begin to deal with life after death. So the things now that we're going to be talking about is this. That is, what really is life all about over here? What does a man do in this life in order to be happy and contented and get the most out of it? All right, now, in this, the book of Ecclesiastes is going to show us that man has this tendency. Man has a tendency to look at life. And he says, now I want to get the most out of life. We see all kind of commercials on television. All of them are geared for this. They're all geared to show us how we can get the very maximum out of life right now. But the book of Ecclesiastes then does this. It comes down and it says, now as we're living in this life, there is something that happens to all mankind, and that is death. And when we begin to look at death, then it throws life all out of perspective in many people's eyes. But what it really does, what death really does, is that it actually puts life into its proper perspective. Now, here is what we do, and today we're going to begin down in chapter 2 and in verse 18. But before we get there, Solomon has said this. Solomon has said that God has given him all of this miraculous wisdom. He has given him great wealth. So, Solomon himself has said that never was there ever a man that ever came before him. Never will there ever be one comes after him that ever had as much wisdom or as much wealth as what he had. So Solomon said, I can do anything I want to do. He said, there is nothing that could be withheld from me that falls within the capabilities of mankind. Anything I want, he said, I can get. And he said, I did get them. So Solomon then began to put life right here to a test. He said, now I'm going to put it to a test. Because never has there ever been a human being that has all of the qualifications of putting life to a test like I have. I have everything at my disposal to do anything I want to do. So then, Solomon says, I applied myself to wisdom. I applied myself to knowledge. And number three, then he says, I applied myself to pleasure. These three things, so far, we've already talked about. He said, I decided that I would get me wisdom, I would get me knowledge, and I would get me pleasure. So he said, I got these above all other individuals. Now, he goes ahead and he says, really, when you begin to look at the opposite of this, wisdom and foolishness, knowledge and ignorance here, pleasure and sadness, when you begin to look at these things, everybody in their right mind knows that wisdom is much better than foolishness. Everybody knows that knowledge is much better than ignorance, and pleasure is much better than sadness. So Solomon said, I tried these things. And as I tried these things, then he says, I began to find out that really that doesn't bring happiness. Because with all of your wisdom and all of your knowledge, then when you began to glean these things, you began to see more problems. You began to see problems that you didn't know exist until you finally got some knowledge. As little children run around, little three-year-old boys and girls, they have no problems, they have no sadness, they have no troubles, because they don't see, they don't have the knowledge to see the problems that are ahead of them and the problems that maybe mom and daddy have right now. And so Solomon said, with these things here, then he says, the only thing that came was more sadness, was more problems. With this right here, with pleasure, there was no self-satisfaction in man. Pleasure is fun for just a little while. And then it is like eating about 12 dozen chocolate cakes. Now, the first one is good. But after you have eaten that, it's a steady diet for about 6 weeks. Every time you see a chocolate cake, it just makes you sick at your stomach. And so Solomon says, if you're going to try to find what life right here is all about, you can't find it in that. So now then, today, here, number four, we're going to turn to riches. Everybody knows that riches is a whole lot better than being poor. Everybody understands that. So surely riches would be the proper thing. If we could just become rich, maybe that would be the thing that really would put this in proper perspective. So we started out in verse 18. He says, and I hated all of my labor wherein I labored under the sun, seeing that I must leave it unto a man, unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he will be a wise man or foolish. Now Solomon comes down here, and Solomon is looking at this event in his life. He has looked at this event, and he's done it at all of these. He said, I've observed that if you're wise, you die. If you're a fool, you die. And generations forget you. So he says, as far as being wise, knowledgeable, and so forth, down here, everybody dies. They die and go into a different place and stop. Right now, we're not going to worry about where we go until we get to the last chapter in the book. So we just die, we're buried, and kapook, that's it. That's the way that he's looking at it. Just like an animal. All right, everybody back here then, back here in this life, forgets us. They all talk about us nice at the funeral. Then that night, they'll probably go out for Chinese food somewhere and start resuming their life all over again, having a big time, and they're not going to remember us back here in this life. So Solomon says, then I'll just get their riches. Then he said, here, though, is something that just made me hate life. It just made me hate this life that I'm living in. Here he says, with all of my wisdom, I worked, and I got all of these riches. And it says down here, there's going to come a time of where I'm going to die, and I'm going to leave my riches for another man so he can live this life back here. And he said, I don't know who the guy's going to be, whether he's going to be a wise man or whether he's going to be a foolish man. He said, I have no idea, really, who he's going to be. Stop and think. We just had King Tut in town, and we've seen all of the riches that he had. How that he tried to take the riches with him. But all they did was put them out there in a big pyramid, and finally people broke through and they found them. And now then they're going around and they're showing how this king tried to take them with him. Now King Tut wasn't the only one. All of the Egyptians' kings took their riches. King Tut didn't have any more than anybody else. All of the kings had riches. Some of them had much more than King Tut. But the only reason that he's famous is because the thieves had not found his grave as yet. They had found the other kings. And when these kings died, who did they leave their riches to? A bunch of Egyptian thieves. A bunch of Egyptians that broke through and finally went in and found all that gold. Can you imagine what those guys thought when they would break into those other kings and find $100 million worth of gold? Can't you just imagine how they went crazy? They hauled that gold out, went out, got drunk, everything in the world they could possibly do on that man's riches. Now Solomon says, that is what is waiting for every rich man. You can work, you can do anything you want to, but he said, I'll guarantee you one thing. Whatever you have in this life, you're going to leave it for somebody else to spend. Now he says, that is not a very good ending. That within itself is something that just makes me hate making this money, thinking about all the people that are going to be spending it in foolish ways. So he says, then he goes ahead, who knoweth whether he'll be a wise man or a fool? Yet will he have rule over all my labor, wherein I've labored, wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned about to cause my heart to despair concerning all the labor wherein I'd labored under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and with knowledge and with skillfulness. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. Now he said, there is a labor. We can work here. A man can work with wisdom and knowledge and skillfulness. And he can make his money. And he can make it good. But what is the end result? He said, inevitably, somewhere along the line, he's going to leave it to a man that doesn't work. To a bum. To a man that doesn't have skills. Inevitably, that man is going to end up with his money. So he said, this is also vanity and a great evil. For what shall a man, what hath a man of all his labor, and of the giving of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are but sorrows, and his travail is grief. Yea, even in the night his heart taketh no rest. This also is vanity. So he said, as I work for this, I'm thinking about it during the night. I'm working in it during the day. And I get me great amounts of wisdom. But what is it that causes, great amount of riches. But what is it that causes this to bring me unhappiness? The fact that one day
I'm going to die. And the day that I die, a few people will be happy and a few people will be sad. The happy people are going to be the people that are standing around saying, now is the time of when I can pick it up. All right. Now then, in verse 24, after he has covered these things here, and he's saying, now, these things will not bring you happiness on this earth. Remember, he's trying to find out, what's life all about? What can I do to enjoy life here? Well, if these things over here are my goals, and I want to make this point right here. It is not wrong to have any one of these four things. In fact, the Bible teaches that we are to strive to accumulate these things. Why, James says, if you don't have wisdom, ask of God and He'll give it to you. The book of Proverbs teaches how we are to glean wisdom. The Bible teaches that we are to study so that we will know. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and down in verse 10, God made all of these things for us to enjoy. And then we are told that we are to work with our hands that we may have to give to them that have need. Any one of these things, none of these things are sin. None of these things are wrong. But here's the key. Right here, when we take these things and make them our goals in life, if you believe that these are going to bring you happiness, you're going to find that there is something that is waiting on you that's going to bring you unhappiness, and that is death. Death is the thing that keeps those things from making life what we think it really is. Now, there are blind people running around thinking that if they have these things, that they're going to be happy. They put their death off. They cover their death. They don't look at death. They don't think about death. All they think about is life. And then one day they have to face the fact that they are dying. And then they look back and they say, what a miserable thing all of this is. It's all vanity. I've gotten all of these things. And just as I have gotten it, what happens? My life is taken away and I leave that for somebody else. So what is the conclusion? Here is Solomon's first conclusion. He said, now here is one thing in this life that you want to strive for. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. Now God has given us something in this life that we need to consider and we need to use. He said, for who can eat and who can have more enjoyment than I? For to the man that pleaseth him, God giveth wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail, to gather and to heap up, that he may have to give to him that pleaseth God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Alright, now, Solomon says over here, the first thing that I want you to get is that you are to enjoy all of your labor. You're to enjoy your labor. You are to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Enjoy life while you're going through it. Don't try to store those things up and think that those are the goals of your life. And if you reach them, then you're going to have it. You can become a millionaire. Lots of people have hundreds of thousands of dollars. Down here on Skid Row, we read about it every once in a while. A hotel catches on fire. And when they go in and put the fire out, a man is dead. A man that's been eating out of garbage cans. And they'll find maybe $100,000 stuffed away in his mattress. What was he doing? He was putting his trust in his riches. He was eating out of garbage cans while he lived. So that he would have that money because that was his goal. And people just shake their heads at an individual that does that. Solomon says what you need to do is to learn to enjoy the fruits of your labors. Now he says, Solomon says this, and this really is not a part of our study, but he goes ahead to say that if you will do this, if you will please God, enjoy life, then God is going to take that which the wicked store up, and it is going to inevitably come back to the righteous man. Now, there are various places in the Bible that teach this. Proverbs 28, verse 8, and Proverbs 13, verse 22, are perhaps the clearest that make these statements that it's going to happen. So, Solomon then comes to this point, and that is that you are now to enjoy your labors. All right, now think about it. Are you enjoying life right now? Because right now is the only time that you have life. There's going to be an event that's going to happen to you, and that's death. And when you die, it's all over. That's it. There's no second time around. And so what Solomon says is, enjoy these things. Enjoy the fruits of your labor. Enjoy your work. Enjoy that whatever your work brings to you. Be involved in those things that you do enjoy doing. Alright? Now, he starts out then in chapter 3. And we want to take a look at this chapter very quickly because there's some interesting things in here. Now he starts out to tell what life is all about. He said, for everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. Now the book of Proverbs tells us that there is a purpose for everything that has been made. There is a purpose for everything, and there is a time for every purpose. Alright, now, for every purpose under heaven, it says there is a time. He said a time to be born and a time to die. Now I want you to note that. Over here is one big event that you've already had happen to you that you don't even remember about. Over here is an event that every one of us is going to happen. Now there was a proper time for that, and there is a proper time for that. Now he goes ahead and he says, there is a proper time for everything in between. So he starts out and he says, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, a time to heal. A time to break down, a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh. A time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather around stones together. A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, a time to lose. A time to keep, a time to cast away. Now he goes on talking about all of these times. Well, you can look at all these things. And as you start out, there's a time to plant. That's in the spring, not the fall. There's a time to gather in that which is planted. That is when it's ripe, not 3 months after it's ripe. If a farmer doesn't gather in his harvest at the proper time, he leaves it out there for 3 more months, it's going to rot, and he's not going to get anything. You pick out any of these things. There's a time to throw stones away. If you're going to plant a garden, a lot of rocks out there, pick them up, throw them over the fence. There's a time to go out and gather stones in. If you're going to build your house, if you're going to build your walkway, then you bring the stones in. There's a time for everything. And what he's trying to show is that if you want to be happy in this life, there's one thing you have to understand. You have got to get in harmony with this world. And by that, I mean you're not going to buck this world and come out a winner. Now, this world is spinning a certain direction. The winds are blowing a certain direction, and you're not going to get it changed the other way around. There are certain months of summer, there are certain months of winter. You're not going to change that, whether you'd like to or not. You get your hippie flags on and run out down the streets and do whatever you want to do, and winter and summer are still going to come. See, night and day are still going to be here. There are certain times for certain things. Now, if you want to be happy, learn when to do the proper things. That's the thing that he's getting at here. Learn to do the proper things. God didn't make this world just for you or just for me. He made this world for mankind. God set this world to operate in a certain system. And if you want to be happy, you'll learn what the system is, and you'll work within the system instead of always trying to change everything because you don't like the way that it operates. You're going to work within the system. All right? He goes ahead here to
Let's get on down here to verse 9. He said, "What profiteth he that worketh wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. He hath made everything beautiful in its time." Now there is a thing for us to understand. Number two, there is a time for everything. And He has made everything beautiful within that time period. And if you try to work against the laws of nature, if you try to work against the laws of the way this universe operates, you're going to find everything is ugly, everything is mean, and you're going to be trodden down. Now, what it's saying is, don't rebel. Don't try to change everything. Learn when to do things that need to be done. Why, there's a time to embrace up here and a time to refrain from embracing. There's a time to kiss your wife and there's a time not to kiss your wife. We need to learn that. You go back here and all of a sudden back here in the foyer start to embrace your wife, give her about a half a dozen kisses, and every time you come in a little while, everybody's going to get away from you, not going to speak to you. You're going, "Why don't people like me? Why don't people like me? Aren't you supposed to kiss your wife?" Yeah, at a certain time, see. Just like there's a certain time to gather in the rocks, a certain time to throw the rocks away. So we need to learn how to live in this world. Now he says, you're locked in. This is a point. You're locked in. Now he said, this is a sore travail. In other words, here's what I've got to do. I've got to live all of my 70 years working within the system. Just stop and think. I'm not going to be able to change it. When they lay me in the ground, the world will still be turning in the same direction it was when I was born. The ducks will still be flying the south in the winter and the north in the summer, and I'm not going to change that pattern. And the grass is going to grow in the summer, and it's going to be dormant in the winter, even though I'd much rather mow my grass in the winter when it's not quite so hot. And so, on and on I could go in these things, but one thing I need to understand is, I'm locked in this system. It's not going to change for me. It's not going to change for me. And so, what's my hopes of getting out? Nothing. That's it. I'm not going to change it. I'm here to work within it. So we need to learn that. Now he said this. Also he has set eternity in their heart. Yet so that a man cannot find out the work that God hath done from the beginning even to the end. Now there's another thing that God's done to man. He's put him in this system to work. And God has set eternity in the mind of man. Every man thinks about life out here. How long will I live? Will there ever be a time when I'll cease to exist? I wonder how long ago it was when God had His beginning. Didn't we all ask that? Didn't our mamas and daddies tell us God never had a beginning? And we said, "I don't understand it," and then they say, "I don't either." Why, sure they did if they were honest. And then they would sit down and show that God had to be eternal. And it just boggles the mind of man. Man cannot comprehend it. But there's that thought God placed in man's mind. He didn't place it in any other people's mind. Gorillas don't think about it. See, animals don't think about that. But man does. And yet, God made this universe that I am locked into in such a manner that I can never find out about all about God. I can never find out about why and how God did all these things. I can never find out about this. I'm locked into this system, and yet I wonder about it all the time. I saw a National Geographic program last night on the Sahara Desert. Just absolutely fascinating. You look out there, you see all that sand and nothing out there. And you go out and that thing is just alive with little bugs and lizards and animals about that far underneath the sand.
That's where they lived, just running all over that place, underneath the sand. Couldn't believe it. Just absolutely couldn't comprehend it. And so the scientists are out there with all their stations set up, trying to figure out, how did these little bugs evolve some of these great things that they've got? In the system of evolution, they say we just can't comprehend how that they could do these things. And so they're trying to figure out how evolution could provide all of these things. That's what this is saying right here. Every one of those evolutionists has eternity in their mind. They look back and they say, these things have been doing this probably for 50,000 years. Another said probably 5 million years. Another 2 billion years. You know, it just takes this long for some of the great things that they've got in there. But they're not going to figure it out, are they? God has done all of these things back here, and man's not going to figure it out. What Solomon is saying, you and I know the answer. We could go to the book of Romans, as Tom was talking about this morning, and we understand man lives by faith. And the Bible tells us certain things. The Bible tells us God's always been here. The Bible tells us God created these things. God made them. So I can accept it by faith. So I understand that. But here's the thing, see. Here's what we're getting at. No, I can live by faith in here. But here's one thing that man has to put up with. Man has these problems in his mind. And he can't work them out. And it's all within the system of God. God made it that way. He made it that way. He gave us the desire to try, and yet He is stymieing us so that we cannot do it. Now, when you think about it, you ought to get on your knees and thank God for that, because that is one of the great things that God has given man that really ought to bring us back to the answer that there is a great God in Him. Now, He said in verse 12, He said, I know that there's nothing better for them than to rejoice, to do good so long as they live, and also that every man should eat, drink, enjoy good in all his labor. It is a gift of God. So what do? He said, you're not going to figure it out. So don't worry about it. What am I going to do with those little bugs? What am I going to do with those little things? They just drive me crazy thinking about it. He said, enjoy them. Enjoy them. Look at them. Enjoy them. And do all of this, enjoy your eating and your drinking. And so he says, do good. So we might put that down there for number 3. Do that which is good and enjoy all of these things that you've labored for. All right, now, in verse 16, then he's coming back to death. And we want to see now what he has to say about this death. This death out here is the thing that equalizes all of this. We're getting ready to go out of this world. Now keep in mind the idea is he is not even considering life after death yet. It's just like you have seen people die, but you've never seen where they went. So when a person dies, there's where it stops. Now, Solomon is going to show in here that really when you get to looking at life in this way, there's another thing that really affects man, and that is that life is not fair. Life just doesn't look like it's fair. Because look at all that I've got, all that I've worked for, and then there's one event that happens to me that put old Lowell up here, and a dog. Exactly the same thing. That the ending that I have is exactly the same ending as a dog. Now, I want you to remember, he's not talking about life after death yet, see. He's just talking about what you see. If I took one of my dogs out hunting, and I got out there and got lost, and I froze to death, my dog froze to death, you come out and you find me, what's the difference between my dog and myself? We're out there both froze to death. Pick me up, there's no life in my body. Pick a dog up, there's no life in his body. Leave us lay on top of the ground, I'll decay, he'll decay. Take your chemical analysis out there and analyze us, and I'll turn back into dust, and he'll turn back into dust. You look at the air around us and you won't see my spirit up there and his spirit down there anywhere. And you say, what's the difference between Lowell dying and his dog dying? Nothing. As far as man can see in this life. If we're just looking at this and not looking at life after death and other passages, this is what he deals with. Now we have to understand it in this way and put everything in its context to understand that that really is what he's talking about. All right? Now, he says, let's go down to verse 18. He said, I said in my heart, it is because of the sons of men that God may prove them, that they may see that they themselves are but as beasts. Now, this is another thing God's going to put me to the test on. God's going to show me here that if I have any sense at all, and life here, this is what I'm zeroing in on, and this is why I think I am so great. God's going to show me that if this is it, if that line right there is an actual line and there's nothing on the other side of it, there's no difference between myself and an animal. Now, Solomon says God did this on purpose. God didn't let us see behind that curtain. Why, if I could look out there, you know, up through a telescope somewhere, and see people who have died, and all of them up there, and they're all having a good time and enjoying themselves and laughing and having all kind of pleasure. I put my telescope down there and find a bunch of people burning in hell, and I see the fires flaming up and licking them and them crying and screaming. Why, certainly. I'd say, boy, I don't want to go to that thing. I don't want to go to that thing because I'm smart. I don't want to go to that. Now, God's told me about those places. And if I'll be the right kind of person, then I don't want to go there because I believe God. You see, it comes back to faith. But if God actually showed it to me, then I wouldn't need God anymore. I'd have my own knowledge. All right? God put up the veil. God made it purposefully so I can't see what's going on up there. And I can't see what's going on down there. He did it purposefully. Try me out. See what kind of guy I'll be. Well, then, after I find out that this right here, the same thing happens, will this turn me bitter? Or will it turn me to God? And will I put my faith in God? So he said in verse 19, for that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them. As the one dies, so the other. Yea, they all have one breath. The man hath no preeminence above the beast, for all is vanity. All go into one place. All are of the dust, and all turn to the dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man, whether it goeth upward, or the spirit of beast, whether it goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I saw that there is nothing better than the man should rejoice in his works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him back to see what shall be after him? So, Solomon says, that over here when you die, this death over here, a man needs to understand that if you're looking at life on this earth, remember, life under the sun, what's it all about? Well, the end result is the same thing that happens to an animal. And how do I know that I have any preeminence over an animal? You say, why, didn't God say over in the Hebrew letter? Yeah, I know God said over there, but remember, the book of Ecclesiastes isn't dealing with that. The book of Ecclesiastes says, for the first 11 chapters, let's just play like there's no life after death. Let's just act like that's all there is to it, and let's see what kind of life you ought to live. Alright, then if that's all that there's no life after death, then we understand, as people look at it, that we'd understand then that there's no difference between myself and my dog. The end result is going to be the same. So, what do you do? Well, whether you've got wisdom, I don't care how wise I am, I'll die just like my dog. Whether I've got knowledge, I'll die just like my dog. Whether I have a lot of fun, I'll die just like my dog. Whether I'm the richest man in the world, I'll die just like my dog. It doesn't make any difference. So what do you do? Well, between here and here, you do these things. You enjoy your job, enjoy your labor. You get within the system of time. You don't try to buck the system. You don't try to change the things that God's made. And you work within the time periods that God's made. And you do good. Those are the things that really are going to have any value as far as life is concerned if you just look at life upon this earth. And that's all you look at. Now, right there is where we're going to stop. We'll go ahead and we'll continue in the book of Ecclesiastes and see how he goes ahead and he develops his theme showing us these things that he has been showing us and the things up here that are really good for us. And then finally, he'll get down to the end to say, now then, let's bring in the third part and put the whole thing in its proper perspective. If you today need to either become a Christian or to confess your sins one to the other, you let it be made known while we stand, while we sing the first stanza of this song.